And we're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Bey's 6 lines from the bottom. We're in the middle of talking about Dinim of Ribis, of course, and here the Gemara brings a din that's not really directly related to the Dinim of Ribis, but it is a din of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman had summarized the whole concept of Ribis is, including all the various cases that are also Dirabanan, is agar neter. When you're giving somebody extra, something extra, because he's doing you a favor and allowing you to delay the payment or delay the delivery of the item or whatever, then you get into issues of Ribis. So now Rav Nachman mentions a related point, which actually, according to some Rishonim, as we'll see, is actually relevant to the Dinim of Ribis as well. So Rav Amar Rav Nachman, Hayman de Oizif Pshiti Mechavre, if a person borrows Prutus from somebody else. So you might have, in other words, he's borrowing a certain amount of money, but he wants it in Prutus, because, for example, he wants it to be able to do a bunch of small transactions, whatever. The Ashtach Be Tofaina. Then later on, when he counts out, so let's say they had made up, he's going to lend him 100 prutas. Then when he counts it up, he finds there's more than 100. So we have to ask, did the person just make a mistake counting it, or is there something else going on over here? So Rav Nachman says, Ibchdesha das toya, if the difference is something where it would be reasonable to make a mistake, and it may well be that he miscounted, Michayev la adurilei, then he would have to return him the extra amount. The ilav, and if not, which we're going to define soon, what that means, matona ba'almahudiyovle, then we can assume that it means that the malva is giving him a present, is giving him extra amounts as a present, and he wouldn't have to pay that back. Now there are Rishonim who learn that if the other guy comes and says later on, you know what, in the end I lent you 120, you need to give me back 120, then that would be different. He would have to give it back. He would have to give it back anyway. All it is is then we would say that there's no there wouldn't be any shvua involved, for example, that there wouldn't be any shvua because after all the loiva agrees that he did receive more. Now you could say, why don't you just ask him whether he wanted to give him a present or not? But we don't have to do that. In other words, we could have even that he did in fact give him extra. But for example, we could have, as we said, he wanted to give him a present, and he does it in such a way without informing him. So therefore, it's not necessarily going to do any good to ask him, did you mean to give extra or not? Now here, Rashi is learning that we're talking about specifically when the malva is giving the money to the loiva in the first place, that we're talking about when you have this extra over here. If it were to be the other way around, when the loiva returns to the malva, then there would be an obvious problem of ribis, because then he's giving him extra more than what he borrowed from him. That's the point of Rashi. On the other hand, the Rambam does bring that it would be, we are talking about even when the loiva is returning the money to the malva, and there's various explanations. So why would that be a problem of ribis? So one possibility, Magen Mishnah and Rambam says, because we're not going to assume that the loiva, knowing that ribis is a very serious thing, and knowing that he's going to be machshel the other guy and taking ribis, we could assume other things being equal, that he's not doing it because of ribis, but rather he's doing it because of some other reason, as the Gemara is going to want to say, that he gives him a present. There's also an explanation from Rabbi Yosef Shalom Yoshev, actually, that says that we can be talking about where they're good friends, and he anyway might give him such a present. So the Gemara says, Hechi Dami, what exactly do we mean? What's the definition of Hechi Dami B'chdesha Adas Toya? What is the definition of B'chdesha Adas Toya? What are the amounts that we consider that it's likely that the guy made a mistake and miscounted? Omer of Acha Brezer of Yosef, V'isur Raisa V'chum Shaisa. For example, if you have if the amount of the difference is exactly divisible by 5 or by 10, Isaraisa would be tens, Chumshaisa would be fives. The point is, Rashi and Tosfos explain, well, Tosfos first of all explains that people used to generally count by fives then, the same way as we count in units. We count one by one. They used to often count things by fives. So now what happens is, for example, Rashi explains, and sometimes you have this nowadays as well. People count up coins, for example, and they make up, and they make piles of five or piles of 10 of them. So if you find, for example, let's say you were supposed to be borrowing 100, or going to the Rambam, you're supposed to be returning 100, and now you find there's 110, the likelihood is, while you were counting, you miscounted the number of piles of 10, and the same thing if it was piles of 5. So then it's b'chdei shadas toya, then the likelihood is that it was a mistake, and then you have to return it to him. But otherwise, if it's not some random value, then you wouldn't have to, because then we can assume it's a present. The Rambam actually learns somewhat differently based on the Rif. First of all, Tosfos says that it really depends on how people do in a particular time and place. We count things usually by ones, so therefore any difference would be b'chdei shadas toya, because any time you could have that you got mixed up on the number and you miscounted. The Rambam makes a point that it can be, in fact, if the difference is one or two, that would be considered b'chdei shadas toya, because it's true, nowadays we do count things by units. But another example, the Rambam says, you may also have, let's say you might have, you're going to be dealing with a lot of piles of coins, you might have, let's say, that you're going to say every time you set aside a pile of 10, you're also going to put elsewhere on the table, you're going to put one coin to represent that pile. And then later on, instead of counting the piles, you'll count up the individual coins. Now, conceivably, those individual coins might then go and accidentally get mixed up with the regular money, what you're actually using to lend or to return the, loan rather than to keep the count with. And therefore, you have to see whether the amount of the difference is equal to that. If, let's say, for example, the amount of the loan was supposed to be 100, in which case, if you're doing, let's say, you're doing piles of 10, then there's going to be, if you're doing piles of 20, of 5, let's say, then there's going to be 20 such counting coins. If now you find that the difference is 20, that he actually gave you 120, then you have reason to think that maybe that's what it is, that he mixed up the counting coins with the coins that were supposed to be the actual loan itself. So those are the possibilities. But in other words, if, let's say, for example, it was some random value that doesn't fit with any of those. Let's say, for example, it was 17 extra coins for 100, then that's not b'chdei shadas toya, then the likelihood is that he's giving him a present for some reason. So the Gemara asks, Omalei Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rav l'Rav Ashi, the e-inish takifahu. Now, what about if this loiva or malva, as the case may be, is a tough kind of guy, a stingy kind of guy? The lo yahiv matoni, he's not the kind who's prone to give presents. My, then what are you going to say? If you have, it's not an amount, but they shadas toya, then what are you going to attribute those extra coins to? Omalei, said Rav Ashi, says, even then this din would work. During a migzog gazlay, it might happen that previously he had stolen from him. And now what he's doing is he's including it into the cheshbon. So say, for example, in our example, where there's 17 extra coins, previously he may have stolen from him 17. So now he figures, rather than face him directly and say, I stole from you previously 17 protas, here they are, he's going to include them when he's anyway lending them money or when he's anyway paying him back, and include it in that. And that works, the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Gozos chaveda v'ivlir l'v'cheshben. Person steals from somebody else and he includes it in the cheshben of something else. Yotze, then he's yotze and he doesn't actually have to tell the person that I'm returning it to you. So that would work, even if he's a stingy kind of person. Okay, so Rav Acha asked the inish de osim alma. Fine, what if it's a person who comes from someplace else, and they had never previously done business together, so there's not really a possibility that he stole from him. Now, of course, he could have the actual stealing he could have done from him. The Kos HaYeshuas points out we don't necessarily mean actual stealing, because most people are not ganavim after all, so it would be hard to attribute that somebody is giving you extra money and you're definitely going to say, "Punk, this person was a ganav or a gazlan." Rather, they mean, in other words, that the Rav Acha is assuming that there had been some kind of business transaction between them before where he had overcharged him or otherwise cheated him. So now the question is, if they've never done business together before, then what? What would be the din then? On the way, Rav Ashi says, still, Dilma in a shachrin a gazle, you may have somebody else stolen from him, and he's embarrassed to face him and give it to him to his face. So he says to this person, anyway, you're lending him money. When this guy comes to borrow money from you, then take this money and include it in the cheshbon and give it to him as well. So even in that case, it could work. So the din is a din nonetheless, that when you have the chdeisha das toya, when it's an amount that it may be, in fact, that he mistook, that he mixed up, that he miscounted, or that he put in those counting coins, as the Rambam says, or whatever, then we'd say that it's not considered a present, and you actually have to return it. But otherwise, we would say you don't have to return it. And again, you have Rishonim who point out, if the other guy comes and says, you know what, fact is, I did give you extra, so now make sure you pay me back extra, then that would be different, and you do, in fact, have to give it to him, because he is very clearly saying that he gave it to you, that he gave it to you deliberately and not as a matana. Within the Rambam's opinion, by the way, here, Rashi says that the same thing would be if you have any multiple of 5 or any multiple of 10, as the Gemara is saying over here. There are Mefoshim on the Rambam who learn that the Rambam may disagree with that and say that if it's multiples of 5 or 10, then maybe not, because that's not likely to be a mistake. If you have, let's say he was supposed to give him 100 and instead he gave him 115, you're going to say that 3 times he made a mistake and miscounted the number of piles of 5, not very likely, whereas Rashi would say that is still b'chdei shadas toya. Okay. Getting back to dinim, so again, according to the Rambam, this is relevant to the dinim of ribis as well, because according to the Rambam, this din applies even when the loiva is paying back the malva. It's not necessarily considered ribis, again, because we can assume, like the Magen Mishnah says, that the loiva is not going to deliberately give the other guy ribis and nimachshel him, or because, as Rabbi Yosef Shalom says, we may be talking about where they're good friends anyway, and it's highly likely that he is, in fact, giving him a present. Okay. Further on, dinim of ribis, the Gemara says, "Omer of Kahana, have a yisivne b'shilhei pirkei de Rav." One time, Rav Kahana says, "I was sitting at the end of Rav's shiur." There's a different girsa on the side here of Rava. There's a number of Rav Kahanas and Shas. There's like 6 or 7 Rav Kahanas and Shas. One was a chaver of Rav, one was a Talmud of Rav, and one was a Talmud of Rava. So when we say over here Rav Kahana was sitting, it could be any of those Rav Kahanas. Anyway, so one time I was sitting at the end of a shiur of Rav's or Rava's. The point is, in other words, he had been late to the shiur. He missed the beginning of it. Ushmois to ka'oma kori kori. Throughout the shiur, he kept on mentioning a case of kori, which are melons or pumpkins or some kind of vegetable, or cucumbers or some kind of vegetable like that. Veloya dynamai kama. So Rav Kahana says, I didn't know what case he's referring to because I had missed the beginning of the shiur and I didn't hear what the original case was that he had presented. Bosad kom Rav, after Rav had gotten up and left, Amilavu, I asked the other Talmidim, my kori kori kama Rav, what's this case of the pumpkins that Rav was talking about? Amruli, so they told me, hochi kama Rav. This is the case that Rav presented in the first place, and then he was discussing throughout the shiur the ramifications of it. Haiman deyoiv zuziv gina akori. A person prepays money to a gardener for melons or whatever. We'll call them in English melons, because that's one possible translation of kori, even though it might actually be some other kind of vegetable, but whatever. Anyway, so he had prepaid him for these melons. Because the asora kori bnei zarta, right now the price is that 10 of these melons that are currently the size of a zeres, that are half an amma in size, the current price is 10 of those will go for a zuz. The omelet, the farmer tells him, yahavinalach bnei gamida. When I actually give you the melons, I'm going to give you ones that are each an amma in size. A zeres is half an amma. So Rav had said, "Isnu shori." If the uh, if 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 the melons exist at the time, if he has ones of that size that are an amma in size, shari, then such a thing would be allowed. There's no problem of ribis, because again, when he's prepaying, since melons of those size already exist, then it's considered in other words, that he already has it. In effect, he already sold it to him. And now later on, there's no issue of ribis, even if they go up in value. Less nehu also, but if he doesn't have melons of that size, then it would be also, because then in effect he's giving him something extra. Then you're back to the problem of ago netto. He's giving him something extra because the guy prepaid him, and that would be a problem of ribis dirabon. So that's the dinner with you. That's when Rav was mentioning over and over Kori, when he was mentioning throughout his shiur this case of the melons. That's what we're dealing with over here. So the Gemara asks Pshita, isn't that obvious? That is exactly Agoneta. And the answer is Maudatema. Without Rav telling us, you would think maybe not. Given to Mela Karobu, after all, the melons continue to grow on their own, Shaper Dummy, maybe it would be fine. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav is telling us that no, you still have a problem of, Agar Netter over here. That's the case. Okay, so Gemara asks Kaman, well, who is Rav saying like when he says that din? Ki hai Tana, it would be specifically like the following Tana. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Holach lachlavis izov. If a person is going, to milk his goats, v'ligzaz is rechelov, who is going to shear the wool from his sheep, v'ludas is kavarto, who is going to take out the honey and the wax from his honeycomb. Rashi points out the word lirdos literally means to scrape, kind of, when you have the same word is used when you're removing bread from the oven. Ovens in those days, as we learned before, were made in such a way that you would stick the bread to the sides, to the walls of the oven on the inside, and then afterwards when you're removing it, it's called radias hapas, because in a sense you have to kind of like scrape it off the wall without dropping it. The Rashi points out the process of removing wax and honey from a beehive is similar, and therefore it uses the word lirdos for that. Anyway, so he's going to do one of these things. Motze chaver, right? A friend meets up with him. The omaloi, the guy who's on his way to do the milking or whatever, says, "Masha izai chilvos mochuloch, the milk that my goats are going to produce, I'm pre-selling to you now, and we'll make up an amount for it." Or Masha Rechela Goizvis, the amount of wool that I'm going to get from my sheep, Mochuloch is sold to you. Masha Kavati Roida Mochuloch. Now, the point is that we don't know yet what the actual amount is going to be. So we can figure out an average amount, the typical amount that you could expect to get of milk or wool or honey. But you don't know for sure. So the other guy is taking his chances. There might be more than expected, but there also might be less than expected. So then the Braisa says, mutter. Such a thing would be mutter. There's no agonetter over here, because then the other guy is taking a major risk over here. The whole point of agonetter is where you're giving the other guy some benefit. But here actually he's accepting that he's going to be, that whether there's a gain or a loss is going to be on him. So that's not considered agonetto, therefore that's not considered ribis. Tosfos discusses over here that it may not be so simple. Tosfos points out that when you're going to be milking the goats or whatever, you do it, you're going to be doing it right away. So in other words, it's one thing, you know, do we have to consider that maybe he's giving him a discount because the guy is prepaying? When the guy is prepaying sometime in advance, like Rav's case of the melons, then yes, you may have a problem of agonetter because you're maybe giving him something extra for the fact that he did something nice to you and gave you money long in advance, which you can now use for your purposes. But here, when it comes to the goats, Tosfos points out there's not really going to be that much time between when you're making this deal and when you actually milk them or do any of these other things, and therefore there's no issue of agonetter. Now that's a point of Tosfos. The Ritva points out that, then the Gemara should at least mention that point. So he says that no, the difference is, in other words, that with the milk over here, you're saying that whatever milk my goats produce, I'm selling to you. Now, not only you might have less than expected, you may not have any at all. You may have that particular day, the goat doesn't produce any milk at all. So therefore the guy is taking a real risk. As opposed to the Gemara is going to point out, in this case of the melons or other similar things, he's pretty much certain of getting something. And the Ritva also points out another distinction as well, is that, when you're making deals on crops, like here with the melons or other such things, here the Gemara was talking about a case where they already exist and they're just smaller. You may have a case that don't even exist at all. When it comes to the goats, usually again, similar to what Tosfos is saying, that you do it within a day or two. So already at the time, you can see there is some milk starting to be present. So in any case, the Braise is saying that such a thing would be fine. But on the other hand, but if he mentions an actual amount, if he tells him that the amount of milk, X number of gallons of milk that I'm going to milk, mocholach, is pre-sold to you, and meaning, in other words, that he's saying, in effect, that I'm guaranteeing you, you're going to get at least that amount of milk. And if they produce less than that, then I'm going to have to supply you from something, from someplace else. Or the same thing with sheep and their wool, and the same thing with a beehive and its honey. All of those also, then it's also because then you have a problem of agonetter. Now the guy is not taking a risk because he's guaranteed to get X amount of milk or X amount of wool or whatever. And the concern is there may be more than that, and therefore you have agonetter involved over here, where he's giving him something extra for the fact that the guy prepaid. So the point is, now how does this relate to Rav's did? So the Gemara says, "Va'afogav zemamela karavu." Now all of these things grow on their own, which is exactly like the case of the melons, which also grow on their own. Kibin de lesnu ba'avishaita. The fact is, they don't actually exist at the time when the deal is made. Also, so then therefore you're also to pre-sell it like that. So you see, this Braisa bears out what Rav is saying in the case of the melons, that yes, even though right now they do exist, but they don't exist in the size that you're talking about. They exist only as half the size that the, they exist only as half the size that, that, that the, that, that's, that, that's going to be for the deal at the end. So therefore that would be a problem. There are actually different Rishonim actually who say that maybe in fact what the Gemara means when it says Isnuhu and Lesnuhu, it means that they don't exist at all. They haven't even started growing yet, which would be more similar to what we're talking about over here, where the milk hasn't even started being produced yet, or the bees haven't even started producing the honey yet, or what have you. The Machlokes Rishonim on that point, are we talking about that this din that Rav is saying, according to this version, that it's Osir, would be only if they don't exist yet at all, or would he be saying, as Rashi and Tosfos are saying, even if they already exist, and just they're still small right now? There is also further discussion. What about, for example, the Gemara is going to bring another Lashon over here that's saying that actually it would be mutter when it comes to the melons. Would that apply only if he's giving him, is there a difference between whether he's giving him those particular melons or whether he's giving him other ones? Anyway, Ikadamri, a different version. Omar Rava, a different version is that Rava says. Now we said before, we have different gersois, whether the original thing that Rav Kahana had heard the reference to kori, to melons, over and over, and he wasn't sure what it was talking about, whether that was in Rav's shiur or Rava's. If it was in Rava's, then Ikadamri, Omar Rava would be a different version that Rava himself said differently. If you say that it was Rav, then it means that Rava over here was arguing with Rav. Or maybe not arguing with Rav, but explaining that Rav's din itself would have a distinction in it. So anyway, Ichadamri Omar Rava, Another version is that Rava says, no, actually, since these things they do grow on their own, as shakudami, then it would be fine. So in this case of the melons, he would be allowed to sell them in advance, even before they grew, or even when they're only grown to half their size. It would be mutter, because unlike other cases of agar netter, where he's voluntarily giving him something, where he's giving him something bigger on his own, here it's something where they grow on their own. So the question is, why? We just had a braisa that said that when he mentions an actual amount of milk or whatever, then it would be osir. And the answer is hasam lav mine karavu. The difference is that over there, it's not the actual thing itself growing. When you later on milk the goats, the milk that you're getting is not derived from the milk that existed right now when you sold it. And the same thing with the wool and the wax. So therefore, so there's more of an issue with it now when you're giving him the milk or what have you, you're giving him something that didn't even exist at the time. And the point, not only it didn't exist at the time, but the point is, the shakli lehai v'ase achrina beduchte. You milk the milk that exists right now, and later on, new milk is going to be produced. So there's no connection, in other words, between the milk that was there when you sold it and the milk that exists later on. So you can't say, it's basically like selling a davar shelo ba'olam. And more to the point, in other words, is when you're giving him extra, when it could turns out there's more milk than expected, and you give it to him, then you have the problem of agar net. But over here, when it comes to the melons, it's different. Mine karovu, because after all, it's the very same melons themselves that are growing. And if you pick the one right now that's growing, that right now is only half an amma, loy osa achrina beduchte, another one is not going to grow on the vine in its place in the same season. So therefore, we can say that all along, it's his melon that's growing, and therefore, there's no agar netter over here, because to begin with, you sold him the very same melon, which now is growing larger, and therefore, according to the second version, there would be no problem of agar netter involved. So now, within that, you have a machlokes rishonim, the Rambam holds in that case. For that reason, it would only work if he tells him that he's going to give him these particular melons. But if he gives him other ones, then you're back to the problem of agar netter, because then he's giving him something extra because the guy did him a favor and gave him the money in advance. On the other hand, the tour holds that it's not like that. The fact is, one doesn't replace the other, and therefore the tour learns that it would be fine. Even in that case. So according to the second version, and that's the halacha, there's a difference whether you have something that new ones keep on being produced, where then you have namely in the case of milk or wool or things like that, where there you have the concern of agar netter versus when you have something where the thing itself continues growing larger and it's not going to be replaced in its place. For example, these melons, where then according to the second lashon, it would in fact be mutter to sell them in advance and give him those melons when they grow large. Next, the Gemara continues further on this topic of so one thing that came out of the sugya is when the buyer is taking a certain degree of risk on himself, then it becomes mutter. Then there's no agar netter, because the fact that he's taking risk means that the fact that he's not guaranteed to get a certain amount of the product or whatever means that it's less like ribis and much more like a regular sale. So in fact, later on in the perek, we're going to talk about the concept of an iska, where you invest money with somebody for him to run a business, and he runs the business, and you're just the investor. And later on in the perek, we're going to talk about dinim, where that can be a problem of ribis, because half of the money is considered to be a loan, and half of it is considered to be a pikadon, and therefore, in effect, the guy is managing the money and giving you profits for the fact that you lent him half that money. So you have issues with that unless you pay him for his work, which we'll learn about later in the perek. But the one thing that comes in when we have the whole concept of a heter iska, is partially based on this. When you write out a heter iska, what you're doing essentially is you're transforming a loan into a business investment. And with business investments, there's always risks. The thing is, on the one hand, so that's mutter, because again, like we're saying in our Gemara over here, the other guy is assuming risk, and therefore that makes it less of a problem of agon neter. However, on the other hand, the fact is he is actually lending out money. He's not actually trying to invest in somebody else's business. He does want his money back eventually. So on the other hand, you do want to minimize the exposure to risk that he has. So actually, so the heter iska has various clauses in it that do that, where in principle, he's assuming quite a degree of risk. But on the other hand, in practice, that risk is greatly minimized. For example, so you have part of a standard heter iska would be, for example, that yes, if the business goes bad, then he may take a bath and lose his investment. On the other hand, the managing partner, the one to whom the money is being lent, is only going to be believed that there was a loss only when he has two edim that can substantiate it, or even they may even write into the heter iska the names of particular edim. And since it's less likely that he's going to be able to get that, then if not, then he's going to be required to pay. So in practice, that risk, that exposure of the malv is minimized. So it's complicated, but that's part of the idea behind the way that a heter iska works. There's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind all of this, that when you lend money somebody at Rivis, effectively what you're saying is, okay, I've lent you the money, and after that, it's no concern of mine. All it is I want the extra amount at the end. Hashem doesn't have that kind of relationship with us. When a person does that, he's in effect saying the same way. Hashem just gives us resources. Hashem just gave us a world. And then after that, he has no further concern with what happened with it. It's just Olam Kiminhagi Noyeg, and that would be clearer, which is why earlier in the parak it said that a person who lends at Rivas is like denying Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, instead, when you do a heter iska, in effect, you're saying, in other words, no, I am greatly concerned. I do have an interest in making sure that your business is successful, so that I'll get back my capital, and even make a profit with it. That's fine. That's exactly how Hashem relates to us, and therefore, that's the right way to do things.
But one second,
yeah.
You're saying that if there's risk in a business, it's not considered ribis.
No,
now,
so it depends. Let me clarify. Not that the Gemara is going to call it later on in the Perek. If you have korav aschav rochet lahefsin, if you have that the profits are almost certain, the losses is a more unlikely thing. We're going to touch on that in this next sugya as well, actually. But if you have that, then that's no good. It has to be that the risk is almost as certain as the reward. That would be that then you don't have a problem of agor neter. So now what I'm saying is when you have a loan and you write out a heter iska, which in effect what you're doing is the loan is not really a loan, it's rather a business investment. So you have to have korav lahefsin. You do have to have that there is a great risk involved. On the other hand, in practice, what you do is, in practice, in the terms, they minimize that risk by saying, for example, that in order for you to be believed that there was in fact a loss and therefore be able to deduct from the amount you're paying, you're going to have to substantiate it with such and such proof, and it may be hard for the person to put that proof together.
So, When you have, number one, do you have to have a passive partner and one that's active in order to have a case of ribis or not? Two active partners would exclude ribis.
Two active partners, I mean, if they're both pooling their money together and having a business, yeah, on the face of it, there's no issue of ribis because neither one is lending to the other, yeah.
Okay. Number two, in a regular loan, when someone gives money to someone else, there's always a risk of loss. What's the difference between
when you lend somebody money, there's the risk. Obviously, the guy could declare bankruptcy and escape the country and leave behind nothing, but that's not very likely. We're talking about under the normal ways you lend somebody money, you're guaranteed that you're going to get that amount of the loan back. That's how loans work. And if he defaults,
you're not guaranteed. You're never guaranteed.
Of course, nothing in life is ever guaranteed. I mean, you know, we're talking about under normal circumstances, you're pretty well guaranteed. The guy himself is going to pay, and if he doesn't, and if he defaults on it, then Beis Din will go and then seize property from him, and if he doesn't have any property of his own, then they'll go and take property that he sold to other people, etc. So you're pretty well guaranteed to get back your loan. So now, when there's extra money involved, then you have an issue of rivis. And in the same vein, the Gemara is going to explain, whereas again, as I said, we're going to get to the matter of Iska in more detail later on in the parak. But basically, an Iska, when you're investing money with somebody to run a business, then it's considered, half of it is considered a pikadon, and half of it is considered the loan, is considered a loan. And therefore, once you have a loan involved, then you have questions of rivis, which is why you have the concept of a heter Iska. Where again, what it is the investor is assuming a certain degree of the risk. He's saying, you know, what it may happen, the business goes bankrupt, and I'm not going to get back the half of the half that was the milva. On the other hand, again, in order, we write into the heter iska. In practice, we say, if you want to be able to claim that, you're going to have to bring such and such proofs, which it may be difficult for him to actually get those proofs together, and therefore, by default, he would have to pay. All right, let's go on. We'll talk about this matter of schar and hefsid here in the sugya, and it's going to be discussed in more detail later on in the paper. So the Gemara says, "Omer Abaye, shori leila inish lemeimah leila chabrei." A person is allowed to make the following deal with somebody else. Heilach arba zuzi achavisa dechamra. Here I'm giving you 4 zuz in advance for a barrel of wine. E tokfa birshuska. If the wine goes sour, then it will be in your rishus, meaning, in other words, then I'm backing out of the deal. But if the value, if it doesn't go sour, it still remains wine, but the value goes up or down, then it'll be considered in my rishus, meaning that I'm taking the risk that it may go down in value. And that then when I want to go and sell that barrel of wine, it'll be worth less. So such a thing, so Abaye says such a thing as mutter. Because then what you have is he's kor of the schar, and he's kor of the hefsed. He's taking on himself a major risk there, and that kind of because it's true he's not accepting on himself the risk if it spoils, but nevertheless he's accepting on himself the risk if it goes down in value, that he's going to take a bath on that, and therefore that kind of thing is mutter. Tosfos discusses actually it may not be so simple. First of all, are we talking about whether he did meshicha or not? If he did meshicha, then he bought it outright, and then there's no halva here in the first place. There's no agonetu here because he bought it outright. If there was no meshicha, then anyway he could back out. There wouldn't even be mishapora because if it goes sour, then it's a complete loss. So Tosfos discusses that in some detail what exactly the scenario is over here. And one thing Tosfos says is that when the Gemara says tokfa, maybe doesn't necessarily mean that it actually spoils. It loses its quality in some other way. It still is usable as wine. It's just wine of lesser quality. Anyway, so Rabbi is saying that kind of
what's
thing.
What's the case? Can you repeat the case again?
So the case is that he prepaid the other guy for a barrel of wine. The deal is that if the wine tokfa, where according to Rashi means it goes sour, and according to Tosfos means that it just deteriorates in some other way, but it's still usable as wine, then that'll be in your rishus, meaning in other words that I'm backing out of the deal. But if it goes up or down in value, then it's still considered mine, meaning that I'm taking the risk that it may go down in value. Abaye says that kind of thing is mutter because he's accepting risk on himself. So therefore, there's no agonet. Omelet of Shrevi of Abaye, but the problem is, Rav Shrevi points out to Abaye, how does that work? Isn't that a case that we're going to talk about later on in the parak, where he's more likely to make a profit and much less likely to have a loss? Now, later on in the Perek, we learn that that's no good. In order for it to not be a problem of ribis, to not be a problem of agar netter, you have to have that the risks and the rewards are balanced out. So, and here you have the chance that it's going to go down in value is much less likely. So therefore, and on the other hand, he stands to make a profit on it if it goes up in value. So therefore, don't you have a problem of agor neto over here? The problem is, again, he's prepaying him for the money. The other guy has the use of the money, meanwhile, which means, in other words, that in effect it's a halvah, and he may be getting something extra for it, and that's no good. Amalei, so Abaye answers no, because kibud nevakabel alei zoila, because once he's accepting on himself, it's not just because we're saying that he is rochak lahefsed as far as the going sour. It's true. He's disclaiming. He's saying if it goes sour, then it's not on me. It'll be on you. So he's minimizing his hefsed in that sense. But on the other hand, he is accepting on himself the potential hefsed as far as loss in value. Kibud nevakabel alei zoila. He's accepting on himself that he's going to be that it's going to be on him if it goes down in value. Karev lazev lazehu. Therefore, this amounts to that he's close to both schar and hefsed. So therefore, that's fine, and there's no issue of ribis over here. Now Tosfos points out some details in that later on in the perek we're going to learn about where, and we've already touched on this before in this perek, about the concept of yotza hashar, where you have once there's a prevailing price for a certain commodity, then you're allowed to make a contract on it, even though later on, by the time the guy delivers it, the price may have risen, and that's fine. Why isn't Rav Shrevya concerned about that? And the difference is, Tosfos says, because there you don't actually have particular peiros that were set aside for him, whereas over here we do have a particular wine, a particular barrel of wine. So over here we're talking about a particular barrel of wine. So therefore we have to have that korev lahef. We have to have that korev lahef said. So Abaye is saying that's fine. Once he's accepting on himself that if it goes down in value, he's not going to ask for some of his money back. Then therefore he's caught of Vaskar and caught of Lahepsid, and that's fine, and there's no agonet. Okay. Mishnah says, Hamalvas Khabera, a person lends money to somebody else, Lo Yodur Bahatsirid Khinam. He's not allowed to now go and live in the other guy's chotzer for free. Because that amounts to ribis, because then he's getting something that he wouldn't have otherwise had because he lent the other guy money. He's also not allowed to rent from him at a discount, because either of these cases is ribis. Now you do have some discussion among the Rishonim about the details of that. If they agreed at the time of the loan that he's going to live there for free or that he's going to pay less rent, then there's no question that's ribis. If the agreement is going to live there for free, then it's agreed. All Rishonim agree, and this is how it's paskin, is it's ribis tzutza. Because then, for sure, he's getting something for free that was agreed at the time of the milva, and that would be classic ribis. It would be ribis daraisa, and as we had earlier in the parak, the Gemara had mentioned that ribis, that the Gemara had brought a machlokas Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lozer on this, but in the end, the halacha was, like then, and the halacha is like Rabbi Lozer, that ribis tzutza yotze b'dayonim. When you have something which is ribis daraisa, the dayonim, when it goes to Beis Din, the dayonim will force him to pay it back. So in this case, if they agreed at the time of the loan, in return for you lending me money, you're going to get to live in my chotzer without paying rent. Later on, when the matter comes to Beis Din, then Beis Din is going to charge him, is going to make him pay the rent. If he rents at a discount, then you have a machlokes Rishonim whether it would be considered ribis tzutza or not. Basically, the question is, we learned in the previous parak a discussion of whether there's aynah l'karkos. We said that in principle, the dinim of aynah, of underpaying or overcharging, don't apply to karka. Would that apply over here? Would you say, after all, he is paying, he's just paying less than the regular market value for a rate, would that be considered then a matter of aynah, and therefore we can't call it ribis? We can just say that he's renting at a discount, and therefore it's not an issue of ribis, and at most it would be ribis tzutza, which is, it would be avak ribis, which is dirabanan, and eina yotz v'dayonim, the dayonim will not make him pay it back, or would it be considered ribis tzutza, and the dayonim would make him pay, that you have machlokas Rishonim on that. Okay.
Regarding the rental security, often what happens is, in case there's damage, the landlord takes a security deposit. is the fact that that security deposit is used for rent at the end of the lease considered ribis?
I mean, on the face of it, no, because ultimately there's no ago netto. You, the landlord, who charged that extra amount are not gaining anything from it. Just the opposite. You're saying that counts as the guy's rent right before he moves out. In other words, he prepaid the rent, but you didn't give him anything extra for it. So on the face of it, I don't see where there'd be any ago netto involved over there, but I don't know.
There is. Well, you gave the security at the beginning of the lease, and the landlord enjoyed that security for the amount of duration of the lease.
Well, of course.
So he has.
But the point is he's not giving you anything extra in return for that. If he gave you something extra, then in effect, yes, you lent him that $2,000 or whatever as a security deposit, and he's giving you something extra for it. That would be a problem of ribis or of ago netto. But if he didn't, he's not giving you anything extra. What is the landlord giving you extra as a result of that?
He's giving you an extra month to rent.
But that's you paid for that month. No.
The security was in case of damage. It was not rent. And then at the end of the lease...
Yeah, and if there's damage, then you used to pay towards the damage. If not, then it means, in other words, you just see prepaid for months of rent. I'm not seeing any ago netto over there. But anyway, we need to go on over here. But yeah, I mean, I can look it up. I can look it up afterwards, I guess. But offhand, I can't think that there's any problem over here, because it's not. I mean, all it means, in other words, think of it. If you prepay your rent for an entire year, okay, well, you prepaid it. And the result is, therefore, you have an entire year to live there. You paid for a year's rent, you're living there a year. Here, all it is you paid the last month's rent in advance, and now at the end, you're actually using that month and actually living there. There's no ago netto over here. You're not gaining anything extra.
No, you did not prepay. It's not a prepayment. It's a payment that's a reserve in case of damage.
If there was no damage, then it turns out to have been the last month's rent. I don't know. As I said, I can look it up later on, but I don't know. Okay. So the Gemara starts on Omer of Yosef Amin Yumi Omer of Nach. Afal Pisha Omru. Now it is true that we learned in Bava Kama Hadur b'Hatzar Chaveda Shalemi Daita, when a person lives in somebody else's chotzer, and as the Gemara explains in a few lines, as we learned in Bava Kama, we're talking about where this chotzer is not normally rented out, and he lives there without the other person's rishus. Einet tzorech lahalos lo schar, he does not have to pay him rent, because as we're going to explain soon, it's a case of zenen, of zelei chotzer. But Rabbi Yosef Amman Yumi says, he'll vohu the dor b'chatzer, but if he lent the other guy money, and now is living in his chotzer, tzorech lahalos lo schar, then he does need to pay him rent in order to avoid the issue of ribis. Now, if we say that we're talking about over here, if we're saying that since they didn't agree on it in advance, it wouldn't be ribis tutta, it would only be a back ribis, because Medarai said it's only an issue if they arrange that at the beginning when he first lends him the money. So here it's a back ribis. It's ena yotze b'dayonim. The dayonim are not going to make him pay back, but in other words, we're saying he would have to, if he wants to be yotze, if he wants to avoid punishment from Hashem, then he would have to pay the other guy rent. Tosfos, by the way, brings up a point that in that case, I mean, you're going to say that once you lent somebody money, then the other guy is never allowed to do you any kind of favor. He's never allowed to lend you his house to stay in for a couple of days, or to lend you his horse or whatever. So Tosfos says there might be a difference between something befehesia, when the guy is very obviously, and everybody knows that he's living there, then it really has the appearance of ribis, as opposed to, for example, lending him your dishes or lending him your horse or whatever. Anyway, it would be the kind of thing that you regularly lend him, and therefore that would be less of an issue. If you regularly lend it to him, then you don't really have this issue, because you're not really giving him something that he wouldn't otherwise have. So different Rishonim talk about different angles on that. The Ritva points out an angle. It's not normal that a person should live in somebody else's chotzer rent free, and therefore it looks like ribis. But people do usually lend out tools and cars and things like that for free, and therefore that's fine, as long as it's something that's done normally, as long as it's something that they normally do with one another. And then, as Tosfos is saying over here, you have a difference between private and public. So that might be Negea, for example, if you're borrowing the guy's car and everybody knows that it's the other guy's car, there may tack be an issue with that. And there's a lot of dinim that come into play in that. There's an interesting discussion among Achronim as well. What about, for example, later on in the parak, we're going to talk about there's something called ribis dvorim. Ribis can be with words as well, where, for example, you do the guy a favor. You know, let's say, for example, now that he lent you money, you're going to be his messenger boy or whatever, and give him information, give him the news as soon as it comes. That would be a problem of ribis as well. Does that apply also to saying thank you for the loan? Well, it's the kind of thanks that people say. Like people say thanks for all kinds of things nowadays, even just for holding the door open for you. It may not be an issue, but if we're talking about a real effusive thank you, the kind that you might not do normally, then maybe it would be a problem. Anyway, so that's sort of Yosef Aman Yumi had said that day. So he must have my kamash malon. So what's his chiddush? Of course you have to pay rent. We just said in the Mishnah, Tanena. Hamavas chaveru la yodur b'chatzei lechinam, that if he lent the other guy money, he can't live in his chotzer for free. And he can't rent from him at a discount of Neshu Ribis, because either way it would be Ribis. So what is Rabbi Yosef Aman Yumi adding to what the Mishnah is saying? And the answer is, even Asnissin have Amina, Afkani Mili, Bechotzer, Kaimala Agra, Begavra, Deovid Lamega. You would think maybe the Mishnah is talking about where it's a Chotzer that normally is rented out, and a person who normally rents a place to live, who would normally expect to pay rent, and now he's getting it for free or at a discount. So therefore you would think, so therefore it's Ribis. But when you're talking about a chotzer that's not normally rented out, and a person who doesn't normally rent, whether it's a person who has, whether he has a house someplace else in town, and therefore he doesn't need to rent this one, or whether we're talking about that he's an important person and he would never have to rent because people would offer him places, other people would offer him places to stay for free, etc. Amalois, you would think maybe that's not a problem, because anyway, it's not expected that there would be rent in this case, and after all, in a case like that, where there was no loan involved, Hitaka wouldn't have to pay rent, because it would be Zenan of Zalifas. Amalois, you would think not. Kamash Malon, therefore Rabbi Yosef Aban Yumi, in the name of Rabbi Nachman, is telling us that it is a problem anyway. There is, by the way, different ways of understanding the Gemara over here. When we say Chotzer Lekayim Al Agra, Vig Gavra Deleiv Le Megar, do we mean both of them? Do we mean where it is classic Zenen of Zalei Chotzer? And even then, Rav Nachman Bar Manyumi is saying that he would still have to pay rent in order to avoid the problem of Ribis, or do that's how the Marshal learns, or Maram Shif, it says it's one or the other. But that if it was actually Zenen of Zalei Chotzer, then maybe in fact he wouldn't need to, because in fact that it's not expected that there's any rent in the first place, and therefore he's not gaining anything he would have otherwise. Okay, that's the first version. Ikadamri, another version, Amr of Yosef Aman Yumi, Amr of Nachman. In the second version, he's saying that even though when you're living in somebody else's chotzer without his knowledge, and it's the kind of chotzer that's not normally rented out, and you're the kind of person who doesn't need to rent, you wouldn't have to pay him rent, because again, Zenen of Vizalei Chotzer, but Rabbi Yosef Aman Yumi says, if he tells him, Halveni v'dur b'chatzevi, if he tells him, if the owner of the property says, you lend me money, and in return you can live in my chotzer, sonach l'halos v'ischar, then he would have to pay him rent, because otherwise that's real riddance. Now, what's the difference between the two versions? Manda omer hu vohu, the first version that says that this applies even when he already lent him Kol Shekein Halveni, how much more so when he tells him explicitly to begin with, that would be real ribis because they agreed on it to begin with as when he lent him the money. Omanda Omer Halveni, but according to the second version, that's only when he tells him, lend me money and then you'll be able to live in my chotzer for free, then that would be a problem. But according to that second version, Albehil Vahu Loi. According to the second version, if he lent him money and later on the guy starts going and living there on his own, then there wouldn't be an issue. My timer, given the Meikra Lava died to the Hochi Oisfe, because since to begin with, he didn't lend him money, having that in mind, less one bar, then there'd be no issue with it, and he would be allowed to live there rent free. The question probably
would be that if the rent for such an apartment would be $500 and he's only giving him $25, so then it probably that would be obvious that he's doing it because of the fact that he lent the money.
So that's the thing. So we said in the Mishnah, Lo Yiskim Amen of Apophis, we said he can't rent from him at a discount. Now there you have everybody agrees you can't rent from him at a discount. The question is, would that, if he does, would that be considered ribis ktsutza? Would it be considered if they arranged it at the time? If they arranged at the time of the loan, you lend me money in return, you can pay me $25 a month for this place. Would that be considered ribis ktsutza? Would it be considered ribis daraisa, where then the dayonim can force him to pay the full amount? Or would it be considered avak ribis, only ribis dirabanan, and we would say that he doesn't have to pay it back unless if he wants to do tshuva, lotzis yidei shemayim, and to be yotze, that Hashem shouldn't be upset with him. The question is, like I said before, the question is basically, do we say that this would be a case of ayna in karka, where, as we've learned in the previous paragraph, ayna doesn't apply to karka, would that come into play over here, and therefore we would say, now listen, when it comes to karka, it doesn't matter how much the discount is, the fact is karka, ayna doesn't apply. As long as there was a payment, then it can be considered that this is a valid payment for it, and therefore it's not considered ribis ktsutza. Or would we say that no, even in this case, we would apply that, and we would call it ribis ktsutza. But yes, either way, it would be also. That's when they arrange it at the time. When they arrange it after the fact, then yeah, you would have the same kind of thing. But again, point to the two lashonis in the Gemara over here. If he arranged it, if it was after the fact, after he lent him the money, later on he starts living there for free or paying him a discount, that may not be an issue. So according to the second version in the Gemara, because then he didn't arrange that in the first place. Usually when we have two lashonis in the Gemara, usually the halacha is like the second one. This is one of those rare cases where the halacha is like the first one, and therefore that's how it is. So therefore, whether they arranged it in advance or whether or not, either way he would have to pay him rent. Either way he'd have to pay him rent in order to avoid any issues of ribis. And again, as Tosfos says, when it comes to lending him other things, that might be different. It might be a matter of private versus public, or things that people normally, or as the Ritva says, things that people normally do versus things that they don't. So the Gemara gives an example. Rabbi Yosef Achama, who is Rava's father, Takif Abdi de Inshi, the Masik Bohuzuzi, Rabbi Yosef Achama would lend people money. Now, when they, during the time that they owed him the money, he would grab a hold of those people's avodim, their avodim kanim, the ovid buhu avidda, and he would have those avodim work for him. He's giving them their food. He's giving them food, but he's not other with their avodim. He's not otherwise paying them. The question is this an issue of ribs? Omale Rava Bray, so Rava, Rabbi Yosef Achama's son, asks him, my time ovid marhochi, Rebbe, why are you doing that? Isn't there a concern of ribs? That here these people lent you money and now you're getting something, you're getting work out of their avodim for free. Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef Achama says, it's not for free. Anokh Rav Nachman, severely. I hold like what Rav Nachman says, the Amr Rav Nachman, Avda Nahum Freise Loi Shavi. Rav Nachman says that a slave is not even worth the amount that the bread that it takes to fill up his stomach. In other words, Rav Nachman says that basically avodim are useless. You feed them, and like you're not even gaining from them as much work as the amount of that you're investing in them in food. So therefore, Rav Yosef Rachman is saying, listen, I'm feeding these avodim when I'm feeding these avodim when I have them work for me. So therefore, I'm not gaining anything. And in fact, you could argue that I'm losing out. This kind of thing is brought by avodah, by the way. A person has to be careful. We're all avodim of the Eveshtir. We should be careful that we're not this Abda Nahum Kresa Lo Shavi, that we're not the ones who are not even worth the amount that the Eveshtir invests in us. Anyway, Omalei, so Rava says, Amar to Omar Rav Nachman, you know when Rav Nachman was talking about, you're going Doru Avde, for example, Rav Nachman himself had a slave named Doru, the Marked Bei Kuvi. This Doru would go dance in taverns. Instead of doing useful work, he would go dance in taverns and entertain people over there, and they would give him drinks for that. So yeah, slave like that, Rav Nachman is saying, is hardly worth having. Why Rav Nachman didn't free him? The pashto is because, for one thing, to be free an Eved Knani, you're over Be'ese, and Rav Nachman wasn't going to do that. But anyway, Abdi Achrini Mi Omar, do you think Rav Nachman's statement is applying to regular avodim who work hard? So then in that case, regular avodim, who are not like this Doru, don't you have a problem of ribis over here? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef Achama says yes, but there's a different thing. Anoki hodir of Daniel Baraktina Amar Rav Svirali. I also hold like something that Rabbi Daniel Baraktina said in the name of Rav, the Omar, where he says, When a person grabs a hold of somebody else's eved kani, but also by malacha, and has that eved do malacha, potter, during a time when otherwise the eved wouldn't otherwise be doing work, potter, then he's potter from paying the owner of the eved, because the nichalei de la nistere avde, because the master would prefer it that way. That way his eved doesn't get lazy. That way he doesn't learn that he has times when he can be lazy and there's nothing to do. The word nistri, Rashi brings over here a matter of dikduk, that the shurdash of the word nistri is sor, which can mean sor, like to be removed from work, or sar, like to feel like a lord, like to feel like a nobleman who can just sit around and loaf around. And Rashi explains the tough there is, where the same way as you have, for example, words in Lashon Kodesh, that you have, for example, the word tistorer, tistorer alenu gam historer, which is the same shurdash sar, but the way it works is the tough makes it a reflexive, makes it that you are going to act as a sar. The same way nistere means that you shouldn't act as a sar. Tosfos says it would be Meloshin sosar, like to destroy his work ethic. So the point is, Rabbi Yosef Achama is saying, based on what Rabbi Daniel Bakhtina is saying, an Eved should always be put to work. And if the master right now doesn't have any work for him, and you go and use that Eved for work, then Adraba, you're doing the master a favor. So therefore, in this case, when I previously lent that master of this Eved money, then there's no problem of ribbis. But Rava tells him, Hani Mili, Hech Dolei Masik Bezuzi. That would be fine if they didn't actually borrow money. But here they owe you money. So doesn't it at least appear like ribis? As after all, we just had even though normally you live in somebody else's chotzer without his das, and it's a chotzer that's not normally rented, and you're a person who would not normally need to rent a place. Normally you don't have to pay rent because zenen of zavei chotzer. But we said, according to the first Loshen, where in the end the halacha is like that, that if he lent him money, and then he's going to live in his chotzer, then he does need to pay him rent. So in the same way over here, since you lent these people money, then you have to hold to a higher standard. You can't use the avodim free.
Are we talking about feeding him also? Are they feeding him?
So he is feeding him, but nevertheless, Rava is arguing you would still have to pay. Like this, normally when you want to use somebody else's Eved, normally you're going to pay the master for his Eved's time. I'm borrowing you Eved, I'm renting you Eved for you for the day, and I'm going to pay you X amount for that, the same way as you might rent somebody's animal or somebody's car or what have you and pay him rent for that. So here, Rabbi Yosef Achama is doing it for free. The only thing he's giving them is feeding them. So first he argued that that's fine because the Eved isn't even worth the amount you feed to him. Rava says that only works by Rav Nachman. Then Rabbi Yosef Achama is saying fine, but the master would prefer that his Eved doesn't stay bottle. But Rava is saying the fact is when you lend him money, then you still have the same way as with the appointment, you'd still have to pay him rent. Omalei, had we be, so Rabbi Yosef Achama says, you're right, I'm changing my mind, I won't do this anymore. Now, he's not going to do it anymore, it doesn't mean he's not going to say that I'm going to go and pay the people, go retroactively for all the time that I had the Avodim do work, because the fact is, there is no actual ribis over here. It's not even, at this point, in other words, it's not really even a vak ribis, it's only that...
It's a favor. So
he's saying, in other words, that there's not even a vach ribis over here that Amban explains. It's only because it's maris ayin, basically. It looks like ribis because he had previously lent them money. So we have ribis, so it's a ribis which is daraisa, based in will make you return. A vach ribis where it's only darabonon, based in won't make you return, but you should return at lotzis yidei shemayim to escape the judgment of Hashem. But here in this case, the Ramban explains, neither of the above, it's not even a vak ribis, the whole point is, it's really just Rava is saying, it has an appearance of maris ayin, because you previously lent the money, so Rabbi Yosef Achama is saying, fine, I won't do it anymore, but I'm not even obligated, even lotzis yidei shemayim, to pay them back pay for having used their avodim all this time.